Hi, everybody. It's January 6, 2022. I keep wanting to say 2002 this week. This is driving me nuts. All right. 2022 it is. You're not listening to a 20-year-old show. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. And we got a good friends of ours from Landmark College in Putney, Vermont, our good friend. That's a great college for kids who learn differently, okay? The neurodiverse students, just this, they do an amazing job with children who need that kind of help, okay, at the college level. It's just great. We're going to be talking to Michelle Wallace, Rebecca Maddy, and Brian Young, professors over there, talking about the National Science Foundation grant they have for STEM teaching, etc. They'll explain everything to us, and also they'll explain to us the best way to teach neurodiverse kids with STEM and all that sort of thing, and how they're working. The grant's going to be a nice show. And again, check out Landmark. It's Landmark EDU, and it really is a beautiful school and a beautiful place, and it's great for the kids who need it. I'll tell you, it's just wonderful. And they have a great cafeteria, which we'll talk about. Their fried chicken is amazing. All right, so we'll get that all together. Hey, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. All right, and you go over there, you see all the wonderful things that we do over there, talk about equity and all that sort of thing. Our podcasts are all over there. Our magazine, Equity and Access, our online journal, is over there as well. The current issue is up. We'll have a new issue up at the end of the month. All right, and you really enjoy this issue. It's pretty cool. And also you can connect over to SEL Today, our other website, seltoday.org, direct from ace-ed.org, and you can see all the stuff we're doing and all the companies that are involved with us over at SEL, Social Emotional Learning, seltoday.org. And without further ado, I have two lines here. I have three guests. We're going to find out. Let's find out. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, it's a great day here in Putney.
It's a great day in Maine. I think it's same, but you're going to get a snow tonight, right?
We are going to get a snow tonight, tomorrow, yep.
Yeah, us too. Same storm. Let me know how it goes. Okay, Rebecca, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, Rebecca.
Here.
It's Larry here. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Okay, got your snowshoes ready?
I do. I have them ready.
Good
Nordic skis right out.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect. And Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am, Larry.
Oh, good.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. And
no,
fingers crossed for a big snow.
Yeah, and we're getting 5 to 8 inches there. We might get a little more over
Oh,
there.
I wish we could get that as well, but it doesn't look like that.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Are you in Vermont? You're in Putney, right? Are you there?
Yes, I am in Putney as well. So.
Okay, and two of you are sharing. Who's sharing the phone?
Shell and Rebecca.
Okay, there you go.
We're together.
All right, so we have the,
on campus. We're on campus right now.
Well, that's interesting. We have the female phone and the male phone. This is an interesting gender equity thing. Okay, we'll have to talk about that. All right. I don't know who to start with. I'll start with Michelle. Michelle, tell everybody, I tried to give a quick overview about Landmark and what you guys do over there. Michelle.
Okay, we
do it.
We work the magic here. We have a lot of students who come from all over the United States, and their challenges in education and their strengths in education, we try to figure out how to work with them and get them to succeed. They have learning disabilities. They have ADHD. They may have autism diagnoses or other non-specified learning disabilities. They're all generally average age college students. 18 to 26 is probably our average student age. We're a college, Larry, just like everybody else.
I know you are. I've been there. And how's the fried chicken
you know
at the
that.
Cafeteria? How's the fried chicken at the cafeteria?
Oh, you know, with COVID, I haven't been up there.
That's a loss. That's a great loss of from COVID. That's probably the major loss from COVID is the loss.
I'm sure they're still having it. I just haven't been up there. But
it's the loss of availability fried chicken at the Landmark cafeteria that is the major loss. I think I read that in the New York Times. It's unbelievable. You know what's interesting about this? And I have to make this point. First of all, you said kids come from all over the country, and they do. All right, so while it's in beautiful little Putney, which is near Brattleboro, okay, in southeastern Vermont, All right. I want to make a point. These kids are also smart. Okay, these are college kids. Yeah, mm-hmm. they just have learning challenges. Okay, be it dyslexia, autism, whatever the case may be. Okay, but they still need college level work. Okay, and it has to be taught a certain way. All right, and Rebecca, talk to me. What do you do over there? You're a professor of core education. What does that mean?
So when students come in their first year, they all take a series of courses that we would consider core education. So they take a perspectives and learning course, which is much like a seminar, like a first-year seminar course, but it's very specific to Landmark. Pretty robust piece looking at self-advocacy and self-awareness. And then also they take writing courses. Yeah, no, that first year course is pretty
that's really good.
Key to a foundation at Landmark, as is our writing course. The core education department has a writing course as a piece of it, and also advisors. So there's quite a network of support when any student comes to Landmark, where advisors and the core education team sort of work together to create that foundation. Whether students come right out of high school or whether they've transferred from other institutions, they all start in the same place, getting on board with the vocabulary we use at Landmark, with the expectations for study skills, trying to sort of tease out where their challenges are and helping them understand them, and how to make use of the resources, plentiful resources here at Landmark. And there's so many, sometimes it takes a while for students to figure out how to
good
access
point.
Them. And so that's a big part of
that's
what our
point.
Core education.
Yeah, you know, and I got to say, you said kids transfer in from other colleges. A lot of reasons they transfer in from other colleges, I know this, okay, it's because although other colleges say they can work with kids who have learning challenges, okay, in many cases the college is either too big or it just can't focus on that, all right? So that's why they transfer into a college who really knows how to do this. Somebody's quacking over there. Who's quacking? You hear that in the background, guys?
I do hear a little squelchy thing, but...
Yeah, squelchy thing. Maybe it's me. It should be me, though. It sure sounds like it, though. All right, we'll just move on. I'll let you guys do the talking then. All right, Brian, talk about what you do over there as the chair of STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, Math at Landmark.
Yeah, well, actually, I was the former chair. Currently, I'm on sabbatical. That's my reason for not being on campus right now. So up until 2 weeks ago, I was the chair, currently on sabbatical. But let me talk a little bit about the role of that and the department. So the STEM department comprises of faculty from mathematics, computer science, and the natural sciences. So with that, we offer four different degrees. We have associate's degrees in computer science and life science, and also bachelor's degrees in computer science and life sciences. In terms of kind of the role of the chair, you know, it's just like a chair anywhere else where you're kind of the collaborator, colleague, slash boss of the faculty. The really exciting part for me and these grants that Shell and Rebecca and I have been a part of are really the opportunity to work with students and enhance our offerings, encouraging mentoring, and building out our research capacity. So that's kind of the role that I've really taken and the focus that I've been really working on here. So.
Great. I want to talk to you about that. I think it might be you who's quacking. I'm not sure. I'm going to ask you to hang up, Brian, and call right back in.
Sure thing.
Let's see what happens. I think it's you. I'm not sure. No, it's not him, obviously. Ladies, are you there?
We are. I'm not hearing the quacking.
Oh, that's good, actually. Then it must be me. Although, wait a minute. Is it going now? I don't know. Okay, we'll find out. It might be me. I don't know why it would be. Okay, because I'm right on the system here. But whatever, I'm going to let you guys do most of the talking here. Yeah, boy, it does sound like it's me. I apologize for this. Okay, you guys don't hear it, only I hear it. Maybe that's what's going on. Okay, I want you to talk about this grant. What is the grant for? And I'm glad. And who wants to do that? Is it, I'll start again in line here. Michelle, talk about the grant. What's going on?
Yeah, so in 2016, we got our first National Science Foundation grant from the National Science Foundation STEM solicitation. And in that award, we were in 5 years. We got a supplemental, so we're in our sixth year of that grant. Last year, amidst all the COVID wild ride, we submitted another $1.2 million grant to NSF, same program, the S-STEM, which is Scholarship in STEM program. We were awarded that this October, this past October in 2021. The primary goals for the STEM grant from NSF are to provide scholarship support for students who have financial need and who are academically talented. And one of the main focuses of NSF in this solicitation is providing cohort experience for students.
What does that mean, cohort experience?
Beck's going to talk about the cohort, the way we've morphed the cohort for the new grant. Do you want to do that now?
Sure.
Yeah.
By the way, Rebecca,
everybody calls you Beck, so I'm going to do that too. But before you get into that, okay, I want you guys to hang up and call back in and see if I can get rid of this squeak, okay?
Okay.
Just do that, call right back, and I'll talk to Brian in the meantime.
Okay,
goodbye. I'll be back to you in a minute. All right, very good. Brian, what are you going to do on sabbatical?
Well, currently I'm trying to ski as much as possible while there's snow on the ground. That's the fingers are crossed for more snow. But on top of that, I'm part of these two grants with Shell and Becca, and then also working with the team, also a Landmark. We're proposing another research grant for NSF. I've got a couple of research projects. A lot of things I do are based in Alaska, so I spend a lot of time up there.
Nice.
I'm a forest ecologist by training, so that's kind of the main focus of what I'm going to be doing over sabbatical.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You're a forest ecologist.
Yes, yep.
I love that. You should move to Maine. We need more of you here. That's what we do over here.
Well, you've got some good ones there.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
Yes, we do.
You know? That's pretty cool, I got to tell you. All right. Have you ever read the book? I can't remember the name of it, by Paul Theroux, when he goes to Alaska. Do you remember that book?
I do. I can't recall the title, but yes.
I think the word wilderness is in it.
My master's and my PhD training, and then some additional years there in interior Alaska around Fairbanks. So
that's
where I spend most of my time.
Wow, lucky you.
Yeah, it was a good experience.
It's nice to be
a little warmer and a little lighter down here. So,
not anymore. They had 60-degree weather. They had 60-degree weather last month in Alaska. Okay, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was like dust last month. Yeah, it is.
This time of year, it's still dark. Yeah.
That is gorgeous up there. I envy you. I hope you get up there a lot this now and in the spring, through the spring, to enjoy it. Okay, it's really good.
I'll be up there in March and then again in May through June. So
wow, incredible! I love it. Don't live in a school bus. You saw that movie. Okay.
Definitely not at the end of the Stampede Trail. That's true.
Yeah, okay. So let me ask. Okay, and we can Brian stay with what is when we look at the grant. Okay, and it's a goodly amount of money. I'm going to ask this in a stupid way. What do you do with that money? Where, how's it all manifest itself on the ground
at
Landmark?
So the vast majority of the money actually goes to scholarship. So 65% roughly of that money goes to support students in terms of scholarship. As you probably know, Landmark is a fairly expensive model to offer all the services that we do. And we really want to be able to, create opportunities for students to being able to participate in this. And, because it's through the National Science Foundation, we can only support STEM students. And the disciplines that we're supporting with this grant are students either enrolled in the life sciences or computer sciences. So that's kind of where the vast majority of the money goes. And then we have a little bit of money that goes to basically support the faculty, us, that kind of goes back to the college. There's some overhead that the college takes to kind of have some additional support services from Career Connections, which really works with the students and looking at internship opportunities as well as kind of post-graduation employment opportunities. So there's some funds that go there. We have some money that also helps support our faculty in terms of their mentoring roles with our students. And then we have a little pot of money as well that's in this new grant that's really going to help bolster our undergraduate research opportunities. And that's something that we're really proud of as well. Now that we're a bachelor's granting institution, we really need to kind of enhance those opportunities for students and creating more of that culture on campus. So we're trying to kind of have that seed money to help support faculty and kind of building up their research capacity.
And let me ask you a generic question. I'll ask this one to Becca. Becca, how do the, when all said and done, do the kids look to a career in science? Are you finding that? I mean, this NSF grant is obviously a science-oriented grant. How's that manifest itself at the end?
Well, you know, I'm going to pass this one off to Shell O'Brien simply because my role in the grant is fairly new, and I can talk about that in a minute, but I am from the education department, not the STEM department, so I'm going to have Shell or Brian field that.
Well, let's do Shell. Go ahead, Shell.
All right. Hopefully our quacking has gone away.
It has.
Oh, good.
Yep. It was
so
you guys. It was you guys. It was girls versus boys, and it was the girls.
You know, it was our Putney phone system. I don't know.
There you go. What can I tell you?
So we're funding between 10 and 12 students a year in our project. And
nice.
There's certain financial criteria that students must meet, a threshold. There's a GPA threshold. Honestly, Larry, we have we've had no problems filling all of our slots.
Oh, I'll bet.
So in terms of students coming, Brian would have better numbers, but students, by and large, are interested in STEM-oriented degrees. Certainly our students who have transferred, we have a lot of students who started maybe in engineering and then come to Landmark and realize that computer science is more interesting to them. We certainly have seen that. As a math person, I don't have any numbers.
I believe that. And, you know, it's interesting, and it's probably partially a stereotype, is that, you know, kids who are autistic, okay, tend to really do well, okay, in computer science because they're not dealing with a lot of outside influence. They can focus on their computer, and that's kind of a stereotype, but it's out there. All right, and what I'm interested in understanding is beyond that, this is a science grant from NSF, okay? Yeah. We're talking about kids who are neurodiverse. A lot of the people we're talking to now on the show are high school educators, all right? And they're dealing with these kids at a high school level who are going to make a choice as to what they want to do, you know, for college and what they really want to study. And what I love about this whole thing is that we've given these kids an opportunity beyond that stereotype, so to speak. You guys do that all the time, but I'm trying to talk to everyone here. Okay? In that math and science is something they can do, and a career, a career could be pursued. And that's why I asked the question. And maybe I'll swing it over. Let's see. You want Brian's part of this, too. By the way, I noticed Michelle, I'll call Michelle. Becca, I'll call Becca, and Brian, I guess I have to call you Ian, because that's the end of your name. Everybody, the end of the first name seems to be the big thing.
No,
Brian's just fine.
So,
Brian, how do the kids do?
Of our STEM disciplines, you know, for our degrees, we've had the computer science degree the longest. The life science program, in terms of a bachelor's, we just started last year. So we're really kind of just ramping up our numbers. We currently have our first senior in the program right now. But in terms of graduates and what they're doing, I believe, Michelle can correct me on this, but I believe all but one of our graduates in computer science are actively working in fields of computer science.
Yes.
So they're getting jobs right out of college. And, you know, we really have good credit to this program. All of our graduates are currently working in the field. And that's, you know, really a testament to I would say, the institution and also to these students and their caliber.
We have good
opportunities with them in terms of building up their skills, building up their confidence, having internships. And I think a lot of that really goes well. And that's something that is really paramount for this program as well, in that we have these internship opportunities where they can gain these experience, gain the contacts.
But let me ask my question again. What about life science? I know the kids do well in computer science, but what about life? And the reason I'm asking this, I got to ask this because there's so much stuff going on in New England, biomed in Cambridge, Mass, and all that. These kids have access to those jobs. They're dying for people. Okay, all these biomed and biotech companies, and these kids make perfect sense into this. Okay, how are they doing? That's really my question in that
so
side.
So in the life sciences, we've had our associates for a few years. A lot of the students are then going on and continuing getting bachelor's degrees. They're just last week, we got an announcement that one of our students with an associate's degree has just got accepted into a PhD program at UMass Amherst in neuropsych. So, we have a lot of students that are doing exactly what they want to do, and they're going on and continuing their advanced studies or getting jobs in the field. As for associates, most of our associate students right now, they're going on to other institutions and getting bachelor's degrees, or they're staying with us with a bachelor's as well. So, we're really looking at the opportunities and seeing the enhanced opportunities for these students. The placement numbers are still a little preliminary to really say, but there's really good trends. And if we use our computer science students as a model, we are very confident that they're going to land the jobs that they want or continue on in their advanced studies.
Exactly. And I think all this is important, okay, for high school educators and middle school as well, actually all K-12 educators, to understand that kids who do have learning challenges, okay, can really do the math and science, okay? And it just depends on the effort that the school district can do. In other words, you can't stereotype and write them off with this kind of stuff because they're smart
Absolutely
kids.
Absolutely not.
You know, that,
they
this
are.
Is my point. And you guys have now the money, the talent, the focus, okay, to get these kids to be very successful and understand really how smart they are, all right? And I think it's important that high school teachers understand, and I think they do, but I'm kind of maybe preaching to the choir here, but they have to understand that the intelligence and the future career of these kids is it can go anywhere. Okay, and we have to make sure that we develop that accordingly math and science teachers in high school understand that if their kids are mainstreaming from special ed, these kids can learn given the right opportunities. This is my point of all this, and I think it's your
Absolutely.
Point of being there. You know, it's just that simple. So what are the kids – you mentioned something, by the way. I think it was Becca. Becca, the cohort, did you mention that? The cohort thing? What is that?
A big part of what NSF expects is that the students who come in with these scholarships and do the work sort of band together and develop a STEM identity and sort of work together as scholars on this mission. And there's a lot of expectations when they accept this scholarship money. They need to connect with career connections. They're given opportunities, but there's also a lot of expectations and a lot to juggle, right? And
Good. That's good.
Because I work in core education, part of the reason I was brought in to help those students coordinate all of those efforts, and we decided that one of the best ways was to help with their executive functions was by doing it together through a course, a cohort class. We bring them together once a week. It's, sort of a low-key but very practically driven curriculum. we have all of the students are going to come in and they're going to have a survey called the Berkman Survey. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it is about interests, motivations. We sort of have all students come in and take that. And from there, we're going to start to talk about how those interests and motivations will play out in their teamwork, in their classwork with their mentors. So that cohort class, the students will be talking to each other about how they work, how their interests play out. It will help with their self-awareness and their self-advocacy. We can talk about how to communicate with their career counselors. The career counselors will come in and present different opportunities for internships. We can get some paperwork done in that class for internship opportunities that might come up. How to work with your mentor, how are your undergraduate research proposals going. So this is a cohort that will help these scholars coordinate all of their efforts and juggle them. Many of these students also have work-study jobs. If they come in and they qualify for the scholarships, they also probably will need to have work-study jobs. So they have a lot going on. And this cohort course is designed as a support and to help them further their professional development plans and all of that. So that's sort of where the cohort, to bring them together, to help them become a cohesive group of students who are sort of all in with all of these tools.
And I have to ask, because we're interested in this, a lot of the things that you just said have to do with what's called, I'm sure you know, the social-emotional learning, okay, SEL. Okay?
Absolutely.
And and as you were talking about that, it seems to me you were touching on a lot of aspects of social-emotional learning. Am I right there?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a really a great deal of what we talk about. I mentioned that I work in core education, so I mean, that effort starts in their perspectives in learning course, but for students who are working in STEM and who have to step in and work with teams and consider internships, they need to know their social-emotional strengths and weaknesses and needs and motivations. How do other people perceive me? What do I actually need in the workplace, and how can I get that? Why do I work well with this person and not this person? Why do I work well in this environment and not that environment? We help students articulate that really clearly for themselves so they can look at job descriptions or go into interviews or go into work settings or even work with their mentor and say, here's what I need. Here's what I need from you, and, I really appreciate you doing it this way. So that's a really, really big piece of what we do at Landmark in general.
It is.
Ramped up for this particular group of students because of the opportunity they have with this grant.
And I have to ask this, okay? The scholarship dollars are there, all right? And the school is excellent, always has been, all right? I don't know who to ask this to. Let's see. I'll throw this one back to Brian, okay? Brian, all right? We talk to a lot of high school educators here. All right, they guide kids along. We talk to a lot of high school counselors here. All right, as you're looking for a college, okay, and now these dollars are available at Landmark, how does that relate to their college search? What do they need to know? Who should know what's going on here? Am I asking that properly? I don't know. You help. You tell me. Does it, you, Brian?
Yeah.
Or you want to pass? Or you want to pass it to one of the ladies?
Yeah. Do you have any comments on that one?
Yeah.
Shell, is that you?
Yes, this is Shell.
Okay.
Go ahead. Students, it's not a scholarship that anyone can apply for. You do have to be a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident.
Yeah.
I need to double check the language on that. Because it's NSF money, there's some requirements around that.
Right.
And the financial requirements, so not anyone can apply. We have our financial aid office do specific invitations to – once students have filled out their FAFSA, then they're eligible. I'm not entirely sure what you're looking for there.
Well, what I'm looking for is for a college counselor in a high school. And they've got a kid with learning difficulties, but who's interested in science. Should that kid apply to Landmark?
Absolutely.
Okay. And are they eligible for the scholarship? That's what I'm trying to just give a little picture of that.
If they
if they don't make too much money, if their parents don't make too much money. I guess that's the key yeah. on it. If they're a U.S. citizen, they meet those requirements, and also they have to be low income.
For this grant,
grant. And what is the criteria? This is an interesting part of the question. Would they have to be students? I don't know how to ask this question the proper way, so I'll just ask it. Would they be kids who have had a special ed need all through school? How does the learning disability part fit into the scholarship? Does that help?
The learning disability part fits in only because that's who we are. In terms of NSF, NSF does not require that in any way. So there's no specific learning disability or neurodiverse. As long as they're eligible for enrollment at Landmark, then that would make them eligible. There's no specific learning disability or diagnoses that we're looking for.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. And you guys do such good work. And I hope I did clear that up a little bit, okay? Because, I mean, this is really an opportunity for a lot of people, okay? It's really good stuff.
Yeah.
And what you guys do is just absolutely – it always strikes me as absolutely incredible. How many kids go to Landmark, all told? Who knows? Shell?
I think our fall enrollment was 405.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a college, everybody. That's a college.
Yep.
Okay. So
yeah, and we're down a little bit, due to COVID, but our numbers did rebound a little bit. So usually our fall semesters are slightly bigger than our spring, but we're down to about 405, but that's up from the previous year. And our goal is usually right around 450.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, COVID makes everything nuts. Okay, and it obviously saves some chickens from the fried chicken batter. Okay, so it's working out. No, numbers these last two years are crazy everywhere. Okay, because of what's going on with all of this, it's just amazing. I mean, I think the job you're doing is just great, and the goal. And I just want to emphasize this. And correct me if I'm wrong. I'll go to Brian on this. Brian, the goal of this is to take learning diverse kids and show that they can do the job in science. Not just computer science, but true science. Is that a good way to put this?
Absolutely. We are really trying to support students who are financially needy, who want to pursue areas in the sciences. And our degrees are computer science and life science. So happened to work out this way that we've had more students in computer science, but those numbers are shifting now that we have a bachelor's degree.
That's cool.
Currently, either declared or intending students at the associates and bachelors, we're at 49 students in the associates and bachelors life science program.
That's good.
So we have slightly more in the bachelors, but that's of 405 students, and a lot of our students declare fairly late. They change their minds quite a bit. They haven't really decided where they're at. So we're only in our second year of our bachelor's. So we're very pleased with our numbers.
And I must ask this question. I must ask this question. Okay. Do you still have to dissect a fetal pig, Brian?
No, actually.
What do you dissect? What are they?
I've kind of gone by the wayside in a lot of ways. There's,
really?
A lot of people really question the validity and value of these dissections.
Thank you.
So, higher level courses, we see more value of it, but kind of the entry level, a lot of students really didn't engage in it, and it was kind of like wasteful. So been a big shift recently away from that.
Yeah, it's good because I still have nightmares, and I graduated college with Abraham Lincoln. So I still have nightmares over. Did you have to, Becca? Did you have to dissect a fetal pig in college? Becca?
I did not. I was not a STEM major. Again, I come from the education realm. So
psychology. Me too. I had a great regular course in science. You had to take. They made you dissect a fetal pig. Shell.
I did a fetal pig in freshman year in high school.
Yeah. See, I went to a bad college. I was in a freshman year in college. Okay, so you went to a high school that was better than my college, okay? The good old fetal pig.
I'm not saying that. I had a great high school, though. Yeah.
Where'd you go?
Yes. I went to North Davis High School in southern Indiana.
Wow, you're a long way from home. Enjoy the skiing and the mountains. Right?
I am a long way from
home. Yeah, you are a long way from home. You are. So this is all good. And now the best dissection to be done at Landmark College is to dissect the breast of a fried chicken.
Okay.
It's the best. Okay, the chicken is the best. All right. You guys are terrific. Brian, enjoy Alaska. What a great spring and summer you're going to have.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here today. Becca, Shell, keep up the good work. You guys just are great over there. Just great. Thank you.
Thanks, you too, Larry.
Okay,
thank
guys,
you,
take
again.
Care. Have a happy New Year, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, the gang from Landmark College, Landmark EDU, check it out. This is really good stuff. All right, and I love working with them because it gives me a picture of these kids who are neurodiverse working their way through college. I think it's just great. It's a beautiful place, too. Fried chicken at the cafeteria is absolutely magnifique. Hey, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Check out everything we do over there. Check out SEL Today, SELtoday.org as well. My name's Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.